The hour of 12:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee members. We were on page 34, slide 67. However, they have moved it to a new series of slides, a much larger, easier to read series of slides. So there's University of Minnesota Consolidated Funds. It looks like this. If you'd get this out, please. And then if we can have, is it just Mr. Fitzenreiter and Ms. Tonenson today, and Mr. Carlson is not with us? And again, if you want to just start by identifying yourselves for the record. And before you do that, Representative Briner had made a request for cost of mission analysis, and she wanted it brought up in greater detail, if not today. Yeah, the future meeting will have the flexibility of do that. So, Representative Briner, you have anything to add to that? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my real concern is around some continuity of data that relates to the statutory requirement, and I just was told it was 135A on the two-thirds, one-third. That's, you know, so over time, we were given the figure 14% the other day, but that is in a context of a different accounting mechanism that has historically been used. And so I would like to see some comparability of data over maybe the last 10 or 20 years so that we can see in some kind of graph formulation how that ratio has changed. If we don't have a consistent context, we won't understand what that percentage means. That 14% is not meaningful to me.
Mr. Fitzenreiter?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Richard Fitzenreiter. I go by Fitz. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer at the University of Minnesota. And in response to the members' questions, we'll go back and look at that statutory reference and see if we can recreate that so you get some continuity. I'm not able today to say whether that can be recreated because it was abandoned so long ago. But we'll see what we can do. Our reference to the previous cost emission study was really our attempt to show today what it costs to what we spend in our mission activities and what revenues support it. That is a different view, accounting view, than the one you're discussing.
And members, I want to remind everyone, we requested at the beginning of session, and there are ongoing meetings now with the legislative auditor and with the Senate, to create mandatory reporting for higher education. We're working with the University of Minnesota and Minsky and others so that hopefully in the higher education omnibus bill, there will be an automatic reporting mechanism so that we will be able to track in the future what they were given and how it was spent. So continue to press on what we want in that language when we get to the end of session. We have a lot of time, and I want to take all the time needed to do this the best way possible. Mr. Fitzenreiter, again, members, there's a new packet. It's February 2013, University of Minnesota Consolidated Funds. It's much larger. It replaces slide 67 to the end, I believe, of the first presentation. So, Mr. Fitzenreiter?
Mr. Chairman, members, the title of today's hopefully last presentation in this series of presentation, our fifth visit with the committee today, is about, and in response to questions the chairman had on his list of questions that he asked us to talk about. And we were going to talk today about, really, if you recall at least 2 weeks ago when we talked about the fund structure of the University of Minnesota and the fact that we have roughly 82 different funds, on top of that about 108,000 unique accounts that money is spent in. I made reference to the fact that that's our structure here that we're going to talk about is somewhat analogous to the state's what's called, and it's a fund statement that's in the governor's recommendation produced every year by the state called the state's consolidated fund statement. What you're going to see from us today is a similar thing, a consolidated view of our unexpended funds at the end of the year. The state, as I said, does a similar thing. They show a schedule. You can look it up that includes things like the Clean Water Fund, the Transportation Fund, the Special Revenue Funds, the General Fund, the Debt Service Fund, the Ag Fund, the Transit Fund, the Highway Fund. They show a complete schedule of all of the money that the state spends. We're going to show you a similar all funds view of our unexpected funds at the end of the year. That document the state produces has 37 funds in it. One we're going to show you today has about 82 funds in it. If you just go to the next page, the policy inside the University of Minnesota, and this has been a practice and a policy long before I came to the university in 1992, but it continues today. And we've organized this really in two pieces for you. Sort of what our view or management view of the units at the institution, and at the same time, what's the institutional management focus of our unexpended funds. It's important to note that our unexpended funds at the end of the fiscal year don't cancel. In some cases with the state of Minnesota, you do cancel those unspent funds. At the University of Minnesota, in all these 108,000 accounts, the money doesn't cancel. It stays, for the most part, in those accounts. They remain, as I said, in those individual budgetary accounts. We calculate those unexpended funds at the end of the fiscal year. That's a point-in-time analysis we do. These funds are routinely monitored and incorporated into our annual budget development discussions. And our feeling is that the ability of a unit to actually retain these funds is an important ingredient in our fostering responsible financial management, because in the public sector there is an issue about, and one I've seen that I don't particularly like, and I prefer this model more, is that there's a rush at the end of the fiscal year to spend money unwisely because it's that sort of, if I don't use it, I lose it mentality. That's not a practice at the University of Minnesota. So the money, or the funds we'll show you today, are really that distributed set of dollars that are unexpended at the end of that fiscal year. We'll also show you what those funds are targeted for. But it's also important to understand that in one sense, we're burning the candle at both ends. These dollars stay in the accounts at the unit level. However, the institution pools those dollars for purposes of investing that cash. We use those dollars to meet the daily cash flow needs of the institution. We use those dollars to support our debt liquidity. We'll go into some detail about that shortly. And to provide the institutional self liquidity on commercial paper that the institution's issued to pay for capital projects that garners us a considerable savings on debt service. Today, the amount of money, the interest rate we pay on commercial paper is about 0.17% in interest costs. If you turn to the next page, on an all funds.
Mr. Fitzgerald, before you proceed, I'm looking at your list. I've asked the question before, I'm going to ask it now because we're going to ask it with Minsky. Any of these funds required for accreditation of either a program or a campus, let's say Crookston, Duluth, Rochester, none of the funds are there in reserve for accreditation?
Mr. Chairman, when an accrediting body comes, for example, to look at the medical school or the law school, they do ask us for an all funds view. And they do, and when they get that all funds view, they will see the financial health of the college. And because these balances stay in those accounts, they see the year-end figures for college X, Y, or Z, or unit A, B, C. I would not describe the accrediting bodies requiring those resources, those reserves, to be in those colleges, but it adds to their viewpoint of the financial health of the unit.
So, Mr. Fitzgerald, there's no percentage that they're saying 1%, 2% of the operating budget has to be in reserve in order to be accredited at either the program or campus level?
Mr. Chairman, not to my knowledge, no.
All right. Is there a question? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fitzenreiter, on your, this slide, institutional management's focus, unexpended funds are pooled and invested by the institution. Could you just describe for us the way that institutional funds are managed, both in this context and for with your endowment? I'm very familiar with the State Board of Investment and the pension funds and what their investment profile looks like, and I'm curious to know how this cash reserve fund, essentially what it is, or a cash flow account type fund, is managed and how that compares with the investment management goals of your endowment.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this particular cash is invested by the investment and banking office that reports directly to me. It is highly liquid, kept highly liquid. Unfortunately, in the current economic environment, we don't earn very much money on these invested cash, probably earning a couple of percent today. We're looking at strategies to perhaps get into some mortgage bonds. Agency funds don't pay too much. But it is pooled and invested, and the interest earning off of those dollars is deposited into what's called the Central Reserves Fund, which is another one of these funds, unrestricted fund, that is actually mandated by Board of Regents policy. And that fund, by board policy, today that fund, I just reported it to the board last week, is about $18 million of unrestricted resources. By board policy, it should be about $25 million, but we're under that right now because earlier in the economic crisis, we had about an $8 million loss on a Washington Mutual bond when they went bankrupt. So the fund right now is not at what it should be. It's about $7-8 million less than board policy. But in addition, out of the, important to note, the interest earnings on this invested cash goes into central reserves. There is a transfer of $10 million a year of those interest earnings over into the O&M account to support academic programs. It's part of the allocation that goes to the academic units. And the remainder stays in the Central Reserves account.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fitzenreiter, the institutional management focus that you have with the unexpended funds, how are those funds accessed? Who has authority? How do you make decisions if you need to move those around for cash flow purposes or for expenditures? I mean, and I comparison I would make the state level, which you know, is that we have a reserve fund and we have a cash flow account. Our reserves can be tapped at any time, either by management and budget as delegated, designated in statute, or by the legislature itself, and likewise with the cash flow account. But they're sort of used, reserves funds are really emergency reserve for spending purposes, and the cash flow account is just to float obligations as they come in. So how does that work? Is there a comparison, I guess, with these unexpended funds?
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Mr. Chairman, members, I wouldn't make the comparison here very closely with what the state does, except that, frankly, the state, while they general, you're looking, when you talk about the budget reserve, you're looking at the budget reserve designated by the state, as well as the cash flow account designated by the state in the general fund. But I know that the management and budget will, for cash flow purposes, tap other funds on an as-needed basis, whether that's this fund or that fund, for purposes of meeting the overall cash flow of the state. The way it works at the University of Minnesota is this money is recorded, right, in all of these accounts throughout the year, but they're pooled and managed for cash flow purposes and investment purposes by the institution. So we don't have to, in this sense, for investment purposes, all money's green. We don't have to tell the medical school we just invested X million of your balances. They're invested 24/7, invested and uninvested depending on the cash flow needs of the institution, which is the sum of the cash flow needs of the units.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Fitzenreiter, what is this money ever spent? in the sense of, you know, I don't know if it's by the president or by the Board of Regents or, you know, if you had an emergency need or an unexpected need or a, you know, just something that kind of came up that you'd like to take care of, is there authority to spend from this fund?
Mr. Fitzenrath.
From the overall cash of the institution, is there authority to spend it? Is the question, Mr. Chairman? Or were we referring to Central Reserves Fund?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Fitzenrider, I'm just looking at your first slide here, and the bullet point under the first title says, unexpended funds are pooled and invested by the institution. So of the unexpended funds, if they're pooled and invested, presumably there would be a way to spend from that pool. And the question I have is, does somebody have authority to do it? And how, you know, who has authority? How does that work?
Mr. Fitzenrider.
Mr. Chairman, we're kind of deep in the weeds here, but if the president made a decision to spend, build X, and he made a decision or asked me that to spend cash, I would say, whose cash are we spending? Because all of this cash, kind of a funny check and balance, resides in the faculty setup count in this college, or the equipment reserve in this unit, or the library reserve over here. And I would say, whose cash are we taking? Because you're repurposing that cash for another purpose. And I would expect that that he would say, I want to take that cash from X, Y, or Z to spend over here. We wouldn't spend over here and spend into deficit and not recognize that it's got to come from another unit.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Fitzenrider, it sounds like the president has the authority to spend from these funds. You sort of phrased your answer in a hypothetical sense. And I guess in a real-world sense, do you have experience with this happening?
Mr. Fitzenrider.
Mr. Chairman, if a repayment plan was in place and identified to fill that spending back up, I would certainly advise the president that it would be fine to do that. And as treasurer, which I'm treasurer of the Board of Regents, I would be obliged to let the board know that that's occurred.
Mr. Fitzenrider, how often do you let the board know that's occurred?
Mr. Chairman, members, it's very rare that this occurs. And one recent example of that would be a presentation I made last summer to the Board of Regents, in which we're, of course, putting in a new replacement for both our student HR and reattaching our financial system to that student in HR, in which we will spend approximately $83 million of university cash, in which we have increased, so that cash will go out faster, slightly faster than the increase in our enterprise assessment that we do on all operating salary budgets of the institution to fill that temporary spending of cash back up. And that was reported and explained to the Board of Regents last summer.
Mr. Fitzenrath.
It's rare that we do it.
Mr. Fitzenrath, then the report is a fait accompli. You report you've done it. You're not asking for their approval.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the board had to approve the project, because they had to approve the consulting contracts that were above the threshold allowed by their policy without us seeking their approval. So they did have to approve.
But Mr. Fitzenrider, how you got the money isn't exactly what they approved. It's the project they approved.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, but we did provide an explanation as to how the mechanics of it would work, and if they expressed any problem with that, the president, I believe, would not have gone along with asking the board to approve the consulting contracts.
All right. Representative Grunhagen, I'll get back in a second. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fritzenreiter, I'm just looking at that graph on page 3, okay, the $947 million. And my question is, over what period of time did that money accumulate? And I'll leave it at that for right now.
Mr. Fritzenreiter.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, perhaps we hadn't gotten to this slide yet, so you're one ahead.
Okay.
But we're ready to go to that slide if we have questions.
Well, unless Representative Winkler has anything more on the previous slide, I cut into him a little bit here, and if you have more on the previous slide,
Representative Winkler. Mr. Chair, just one last question for Mr. Fritzenreiter. You said that if the president of the university came to you as treasurer of the Board of Regents and had a plan to spend cash with a repayment plan, you would report that to the Board of Regents. The two questions that occurred to me are, number one, do you have other examples of repayments plans? And number two, what if you and the university president were at odds? What is your role in reporting to the board? Or who has final decision-making authority?
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
With Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, with respect to your question there, what would I, that's a interesting dilemma. It's not come up for me. I can tell you that the only one I recall in my career is this enterprise, I'll call it the enterprise assessment plan to pay for that. I can't say that I've run into a conflict with a president about that. I've worked with Presidents Hassimo, Udoff, Brunix, and now Kaler, and I've not had that situation. And I would safely say that I, as a lifetime public servant, I would follow my fiduciary responsibility.
Representative Winkler. Mr. Chair, Mr. Fitzenreiter, and that is to the Board of Regents?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Mr. Fitzenreiter. Why don't we go to the next slide?
Mr. Chairman, members, this is the point in time of unexpended funds of the university on June 30th of 2012. It's summed in this pie chart up for those 82-some funds below that level. This, again, is a budgetary view. It is not a financial statement view. It is a budgetary basis. Those are different. This is a budgetary basis, and you can see that it's not rough, a little less than $950 million. You can see the pie chart there. O&M, tuition, and state specials, and remember, when we talk O&M, it's the combined state dollars for our block grant and the tuition revenue, and then the state specials. That's on 6/30 of 12, roughly $398 million. You can see the plant fund there. Those are dollars that sit again in a special unique fund that relate to either a facilities project that isn't yet expended or capital equipment that will be purchased. Restricted funds are in fact those gifts that and private practice, clinical income, and endowment earnings. I do recall, and I should come back to the question about how we manage our endowment income here in a minute. Auxiliaries, again, those are the bookstores, the parking, athletics, internal stores operation, research animal resources, et cetera, auxiliaries and ISO activity. Indirect cost recovery, we chatted about that fund a little over a week ago. That's the extra money you get on top of a direct federal grant. You can see the sales and earnings, $192 million. And if we go back to a question here from a representative about these dollars. These dollars have clearly accumulated over a period of time. You know, there's money that comes in, gets spent. There's new money that is planned for 2 or 3 years down the line. So there's money being spent on the back end that was planned. There's money planned in the current fiscal year that then will be spent a couple years down the line here. So it's really a moving balance. If you turn to the next page, To just highlight the importance of these balances at the institutional level, which again sort of speaks to this unit focus versus the institutional focus. At the institutional level, these balances are not only invested for purposes of earning additional dollars for the institution and to be deposited in central reserves or into the O&M fund, but there are covenants, requirements by the rating agencies that further complicate the use of these balances and further complicate the management of these balances at the institutional level. I cite one example here for Moody's. They require the institution, as part of the overall debt rating of the institution, to have a certain level of days of cash on hand. And that median for our rating, one notch below AAA, is that we should have 154 days of cash on hand. And for the institution today, we have approximately 126 days of cash on hand. In addition to that, because we have issued commercial paper, which we pay about 1.17% interest on, we have roughly $246 million of commercial paper outstanding. There are requirements by the rating agencies as to how much liquidity. It isn't dollar for dollar. In one case, it's 1.5 to 2 times my daily liquidity on that commercial paper in self-liquidity. So I not only have to have it available on a daily basis, I can't invest it for long term to get a better return on that money. And those needs are somewhere in the range of $264 to $351 million. If you turn to the next page.
Okay, let's stay here for a second, Mr. Fitzenreiter. If you had the higher rating, the AAA rating, then does the cash on hand number go down in the number of days, or how does that exactly work?
Mr. Chairman, the day's cash on hand number would go up.
Would go up. Then I want to just stay with this number for a second. You said that this number is fluid, and it's a lot of fluid. What's the range on this? If we took a picture in 2011, or what do you expect the picture to be in 2013? When the economy was down at the bottom of the recession, approximately what was that number? And what's a low, what's a high?
Mr. Chairman, if you turn to the next page, I did anticipate at least some trend line and answer. I was anticipating a question there.
All right.
These are the, on the left side of this chart is Moody's benchmark for our one notch below AAA rating, where the median of that group is 154. The high of that would be almost a year's worth of cash, by the way, if you were to go to the high, not the median. And the low is 110, and you can see the university sitting today at 126. We did not always sit at that level. You can see on the right side of this chart, back in 09, our day's cash on hand was considerably lower. And you can see the trend line where we've now gotten above the minimum. I don't believe that it would be necessary for us to approach the 154 median. I'm very comfortable at the 126. We have, frankly, been fortunate in one sense that our cash balance has increased during this period, and it increased in part, and this is not unusual in the country. You got to remember what was going on in 07, 08, particularly 09, where the economy made everyone nervous. It made higher education nervous, made everyone, frankly, slow down a little in how quick they were spending their money. We all slowed down. And today, based on the fact that we focused on the fact that we did not want our rating to decline, and units slowed some in their spending, that our day's cash on hand today is at a level that the rating agencies now find acceptable and I don't expect that they would need to increase any further than they have today.
Representative Grunhagen, this was your initial question, and did you get it answered, or do you want to follow up?
Well, just to follow up, Mr. Chair, Mr. Fitzenreiter, so, you know, from a historical standpoint, that $947 million, is that, you know, did you have less in the past, 5-10 years ago? Do you have more now? In other words, what period of time did it take to accumulate the $947 million, and is that a high for you? Or is that, you know, did you used to have more than that set aside?
Mr. Chairman, it's members, this is a high for us, and it has increased. I think it's increased probably, I think, frankly, it's probably increased every year for the last decade at varying rates, but it has not gone down. It has increased.
And Mr. Chair,
and it depends, Mr. Chairman, when I say that, also on what funds it has increased in. For example, in this, from 11 to 12, the level of growth in the O&M and state special part of that earlier pie chart has actually gone down, while other funds that make up that 947 have increased. They will increase. They will continue to increase, and I'll give you an example of that, although it's on subsequent slides. In the area of parking and housing, in the auxiliary operations, I make our parking unit or our housing unit increase their rates to pay for and fund the depreciation on their facilities. So they will increase the rate, increase the parking rate, because I want them to build a cash reserve to pay for the next major improvement in a dining facility or in a parking facility, or to use cash to build a parking garage rather than the institution necessarily going into debt. So for those business operations, the balances will increase for a period, and then we'll spend them down. So there are a variety of reasons why the balances have gone up, but I can tell you that the O&M and state special tuition balances declined slightly over this past year.
Representative Grunhagen.
Just a follow-up question. So if I'm understanding this correctly, you need a $947 million. I appreciate your explanation, but when I look at the chart on page 5, in order to stay at that 126. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, members, that would be correct. Although, as the other problem in this Moody's equation is, if the size of the university's budget gets bigger, you need their deal would be more cash on hand.
Representative,
so there's a push-pull here.
Representative Poppy was next, and then we'll go back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I am a student at the University of Minnesota and I pay a parking fee, did I understand you to say that my parking fee may actually be a little bit higher than the use I would eventually get out of it? Because eventually, maybe I'm a student who's going to complete in 4 years, hopefully, and in the fifth year you're going to build a parking lot in replacement, but I'm now paying for it?
Mr. Chairman, members, the answer to that question is yes.
Representative Pop.
There are also repairs made in the course of that four-year period, so it may not be that you wait entirely till later. But we are, rather than issue debt or shock the parking or housing rates in the year in which you have that big dining facility replacement cost or a new kitchen you've got to rebuild, we'll hit the rates incrementally in smaller amounts and build to that funding level. Funding depreciation is something that is a struggle in the public sector. It's not done to a great extent by any level of public entity in this state or in this country. We try to do the best we can in those areas where we can in order to avoid issuing the debt or shocking rates at the time we need that capital expenditure.
Representative Pop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you have an idea how many fees or operations that may be happening? You've talked about parking and housing. Are there other areas where perhaps that's happening, and do you have an idea what that amount might add up to?
Mr. Chairman, members, I don't have an idea of how much that would add up to. I could think some more about that. But it is really confined to, the most part, the auxiliary operations. I frankly wish I could get athletics to do more of it for their facilities. They honestly don't do enough. Parking and housing are the primary locations of that.
Representative Fitzsimmons is next.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Mr. Fitzenrider. Could you explain on the second slide on page 5, did your Moody's rating change? Did the Moody's rating minimum change? Did they give, how were you able to maintain AA1 even though you were below the 110? Is that a guideline? I guess I'm just having, you're obviously far below it in 2009, 2010. Was that rating then bumped up, or how'd you maintain that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we were in the market last week for a debt issuance. Moody's last fall published a paper with a negative outlook for the entire higher education industry in this country. We were very concerned about getting a negative outlook in our rating last week. We managed to have our rating affirmed, our AA1, and we received from both S&P and Moody's a stable outlook instead of a negative outlook. In my discussions with Moody's, and I can get you a copy of the rating, one of their reasons for maintaining the stable is the liquidity we now have and the trajectory and the work we've done to get to the level we're at today.
Representative Fitzsimmons.
Just to clarify then, in 2009, 2010, Moody's also had that recommendation. You were below that, but that your rating had not changed during that period down from AA1.
Mr. Chairman, members, that's correct, yes.
Okay.
And I, Mr. Chairman, their outlook now on higher ed is much more negative than it was in 2009 and 10.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fitzenrider, I think you've answered the question, but I assume that based on these cash on hand numbers that they are specific to to higher education institutions, and I wonder if you could just give obviously if the state of Minnesota is required to have 6 months of cash on hand, our reserves would be something like, $9 billion or north of that, and obviously they're not requiring of that, or we would be in junk bond status a long time ago. Can you give us kind of an overview of where higher ed stacks up in other public institutions in terms of ratings and requirements?
Representative Fitzenrider.
I can get you comparative. When we submit all the questions that members have, I'll give you some peer comparisons that you're asking for. I don't have them off the top of my head today for higher ed to show how the university compares in several of these ratios with other peer institutions. We can do that for you. The one advantage, of course, that the state of Minnesota has, or Minnesota in particular, and why the day's cash on hand would be different for a state is, of course, your taxing authority, and in particular, your ability to leverage in the Constitution, I think, a statewide property tax. That certainly blunts the need for as much day's cash on hand from a rating standpoint compared to a university in which we don't have and doubt will ever have taxing authority.
But you do have tuition.
We do have tuition, but only to be raised. There's not an automatic like
we're
there
still,
is in the Constitution.
We're still trying to get a handle on how exactly it is raised and how much, but Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I the comments about automatic tuition raises are too easy.
Representative Dorholt, you're next. All right. Mr. Fitzenreiter, I'm going to go back to your slides on page 3 and 4 where we do have tuition. And you said that as the university's budget has grown, this fund has grown. Is that correct? Did I hear that correctly? So the bigger the university's budget, the bigger this number gets. Is that
Mr.
correct?
Chairman, no, I said that when the university's budget grows, so it grows from $2.8 billion to $3 billion, you calculate the day's cash in hand required by Moody's, it will be bigger than the 126 we have today. They would expect to see
right.
more.
So I'm looking at these two, and the biggest piece of this is the tuition section. So the bigger the tuition section, that number then also helps drive this reserve number. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, the O&M, state money, tuition, yeah. and state specials piece of this pie at 42% is what it is today.
All right. I'm still not getting a handle on the correlation between tuition and this number then. Does the ability to have higher tuition make this number larger?
Mr. Chairman, what the rating agencies care about is the overall number. They're not concerned about which part of the pie that number comes from.
Well, I am very concerned about one part of the pie, and that part's the tuition part, and how that drives other elements of the university's budget. And whether it's this part or the other parts we'll be talking about, that's one of the analysis I would like to see at the end of these hearings, not today, but when we're finished with this legislative session, is what tuition has done here to drive other parts of the university's budget, whether it's this number or other elements of it.
Mr. Chairman, we don't raise tuition to build this number up to meet the day's cash on hand. That isn't a conscious decision that goes into the equation.
I appreciate that. So we'll see what answers we get to other parts of tuition in the budget then.
Mr. Chairman, members, if we could drive on to another part of the analysis here to shed some more light on this. If you turn to page slide 6, as I mentioned earlier, during the course of the annual budget discussions, what a unit has at the end of the year in its unexpended funds, its balance, it's carries forward then in the budget discussions to the next fiscal year. And all of that is talked about in the annual budget discussions with each of the 50-odd academic and support units. But every couple of years, the institution surveys units to say, what are your reserves set aside for? Because remember, the accounting system, and the state doesn't have, no accounting system does this, everything has to be sort of washed out and flows to the bottom line of the institution when you close the books. So we asked units, what have you got those funds reserved for? And we give them some guidelines because we want to get a sense, our head around what they are. And the outcome of that, coincidentally, we did this analysis this past fall, is on page 7. So you take the $947 million of balances, and we inquired of each of the units in those categories, and this is the outcome of what those funds are reserved for. So in the course of the budget discussions we have every year, we have an understanding of what they've reserved those for. So you take the capital equipment, 12%, $114 million. We know by unit at the institution whether how much of that is medical school, CFANS, CBS, law school, etc. What have they got reserved for capital equipment? What have they got reserved for their revenue contingencies? What do they have reserved for recruitment of faculty, etc.? That's the $947 million. We also split that apart on page 8 to say, here's everything except the O&M tuition and state special, $549 million. And then if you turn to page 9, you can see the O&M tuition and state special, $397.5 million, how those funds, that group of funds, is identified by the operating academic and support units for purposes of what they're planning to use their balances for. And that, again, Mr. Chairman, is an institutional exercise we undertake about every three or four years, just so we monitor the balances every year, but we do a deep dive on them every 3 or 4 years to make sure we understand what their planned use is. Because remember, I don't necessarily like the burning the candle at two ends, but we're watching what they're spending them for. We're leveraging them for investment purposes and liquidity, and we're keeping an eye on that at both ends of the deal.
And Mr. Fitzenreiter, all these reports are going directly to you, to your department?
Mr. Chairman, members, this will be an agenda item at the board meeting coming up. They're reported to the president, and they're, as I said, incorporated in budget discussions with the academic leaders each year.
Members, Representative Poppy, do you have a question?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I don't know that it's pertaining to any particular slide or whatever, but what would happen if a tornado hits a campus? How would you actually handle that, and whose cash would you take to handle that?
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Good news there, Mr. Chairman, members, is we have property insurance. We purchase and have transferred that risk to a commercial carrier.
Mr. Chair, can I just follow up, please? Thank you. What if there's an act of, I think this might have happened, where some students somewhere in the state, I'm not sure if it was the University of Minnesota campus, but they came in and they were unruly and created havoc in a building. Would that fall under the same kind of category, or would you need to find funds to be able to pay for that, to repair it?
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
It would depend on the nature of the particular instance. If they came in and destroyed some part of a physical, we had an insurance and risk management report just last week to the Board of Regents, and our insurance and risk management director commented that the university doesn't, our buildings don't burn down, we flood them. There's more ways, as he said, for water to get out of a pipe than you can imagine. Most of our damage inside a building is water. If the student went in and did something that did water damage, which is our most common problem, we would be insured.
Any other questions? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fitzenreiter, your $947 million unexpended fund designation used for liquidity purposes, it's interesting. If you look at your chart on page 7, it looks like colleges, departments, et cetera, have 54% of their reserves if you combine strategic operating reserves with revenue contingency reserves. And maybe you can disabuse me, but they sound sort of similar. Reserves for the unexpected in the future, which accounts for $500 million university-wide. It's convenient to have that for liquidity purposes. If you didn't have any other financial benefit of having those large reserves sitting around, it seems like that would just be money that's sort of sitting there for no other purpose, to that scale anyway. Do other universities use these unexpended funds for liquidity and for ratings? Is that standard practice? If you didn't do that, what other sources of liquidity could you find?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is a common practice in higher education, and it's a common practice in state and local governments. If you didn't, you couldn't, the rating agencies would clearly frown on having less days cash on hand. They would also frown on not having sufficient self-liquidity, although in the case of self-liquidity, liquidity for commercial paper, you can go out and buy it from a bank. you can pay for it and by that pay the fee for it. That, of course, is in this, one could argue in the new normal, that's an unwise thing to do because you're never quite sure if banks will survive. But you can buy it. The price of buying that liquidity moved rapidly in the wrong direction during the financial meltdown for the country. We have toned down our purchased liquidity. We still have a modest 40-some million that we pay for as a reserve just to have a relationship with a bank in case we ever need it. We're conservative in that regard, but the rating agencies would prefer that you weren't relying on banks for your liquidity.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Fitzenreiter, so if each of the colleges and departments or campuses, however this breaks down, decided that they didn't want to carry such large reserves, how would you send out an order saying you need to boost up your reserves and they're required to do it? If they decide they'd like to spend a bunch of this faculty recruitment money and spend it down in a couple of years for retirement reasons or for other reasons, maybe increased competition from other colleges, how do you make them all do it if it's their unspent funds?
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Mr. Chairman, members, that it is a challenging management problem, and if we have seen some units begin to run into financial problems because we monitor their budgets during the year and at the end of the year, and if they are rapidly spending down that their balance, their cash, we're immediately in discussions with them about why and what the plan is to restore those balances to a acceptable level. But it can happen. It has not happened in my 20 years at the university, other than in isolated cases. It has not happened in a uniform way around the institution.
Representative Winkler, one more.
Yeah, final, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fitzenreiter, then I'm not sure what the point is of breaking this pie out. If they're expected to hit a certain level of reserve and you're going to monitor that and make sure that they always have it in order to fund the university's liquidity requirements, couldn't they just as well throw darts at a dartboard for these pie charts since it's not necessarily driven by their own internal needs?
Mr. Chairman, it helps us in the it helps us to know what they're reserved for. It helps us in the budgeting process because we'll also, of course, in the course of having annual budget discussions with the medical school or the law school or Carlson School, it's like us coming before you asking for money. We like to know what they have and plans with their own money rather than just to allocate more money to them. Or say they may come saying, well, we have four faculty retiring next year. We need money for recruitment of faculty. We'll say, well, we just surveyed you, and we know you have money reserved for faculty recruitment. So it helps in the budget and management discussions with them. That's why we do this exercise. I'm sure the units wouldn't necessarily like us to ask these questions, but that's information that helps us and the president make allocation decisions.
Mr. Fitzenreiter, you told the committee that this fund has increased over the last few years. It's never gone down. It's on a continual upward trend. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, the O&M State Special Tuition Fund during the past year went down. The other funds have gone up. Overall, this fund has increased for the most part at varying levels for the last decade.
So, and I think you know where I'm going. During the same time period, the state of Minnesota had no reserves, had no cash flow, was cutting higher education across the board by historic amounts, and yet this fund continued to increase. It either is a remarkable compliment to the fiscal responsibility of the University of Minnesota or something else. And I still have a problem with seeing a number this large And over the same period of time, and I know you said the state could do its reserves in a different way, but frankly, we had either cash flow or reserves, and that was it.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm still going to go back to the tuition part of this.
Mr. Chairman, members, I started this conversation by reminding you that this is an all-funds view. I would encourage you to then go look at the all-funds consolidated fund statement of the governor's budget. Look at the history. Look at the projection. You will see some large numbers there as well for a variety of funds when you look at an all-funds. That's what we have here. And even in times when the general fund has been using its budget reserve or using up its cash flow, the other funds of the state have not been negative.
Mr. Fitzenreiter, we're on the last day of at least this part of the hearings. I want to thank you, and Ms. Townsend also. Mr. Paulson isn't here today, but to thank him also. We're going to have you back. But I want to go to one other thing. You know, we've been told repeatedly that these are very complicated accounts, and they are. And I have a better handle on it now than I did when you started. However, I'm also fond of Abraham Lincoln. And Abraham Lincoln's first career was an attorney. He didn't have the benefit of a law school like the University of Minnesota. He was self-taught. When he passed the bar, he went into practice. He actually had three different partners. One of his partners noticed one day that he was reading the same law book. He'd been reading it repetitively over the course of about a year, and he said, "Abe, how many times did you read that law book?" He said, "Well, I think this is my fifth time." And his partner said, "You know, I don't think that looks good to clients that come in. If you're rereading the same law book, it simply doesn't make the law firm look good." And he said, "Well, every time I read it, I can better explain in the most simple terms complicated principles, complicated cases, so that I can explain them to our clients, to the judge, to the jury. And if I can explain it better to them, it's more likely that our firm will win." But then he went on to say, "It's also more likely that we'll get a better result in court, because it is the law that makes everyone equal." Now, over the course of these hearings, Representative Johnson said he was trying to get this so he could explain it to his neighbor. And you keep asking it so you can explain it to your neighbor, because it's your neighbor that's going to pay the taxes that this organization and others are asking to be raised. Representative Winkler commented to me that he's maybe asking too many questions. Frankly, I don't think you've asked enough. You keep asking more and more questions. And Representative, where is he? Swedinsky, he was helping on some data. Keep helping Representative Winkler. He needs all the help he can get to formulate those questions. Representative Grunhagen, you make it real, and you keep making it real. If you need to access information, you do it. Representative Poppy, you've brought this down to the campus level again and again. And that's what this is about, the student and the campus, and our responsibility to make sure that this money is being spent as well as it can be to benefit them. Representative Norton, you've done a few probes on numbers. You keep probing on those numbers. Representative Brainard, you left me a note. You keep leaving me notes. We'll keep bringing it up again and again. And just in case I'm not clear to the university or to anyone else, I'll have you back as often as it takes so we understand these budgets. And so you understand why. If we don't understand these budgets, then we have no reason to give anybody more money for a budget we don't understand. That's the purpose of these hearings. So with that, Representative Durrell, I believe you have a motion.
Yes, I move to have the minutes from February 6th approved, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Fitzenreiter. We haven't had a lot of discussion about the role of the University Foundation. We've had some discussion about the athletic department. And the two questions that, or the one question that applies to both, based on the premise that both organizations presumably could be revenue sources for the university as a whole. the athletic department essentially washes out. It gets a $7 million check, and it gets a $7 million allocation of expenses back. I would imagine if the athletic department were extremely successful financially, it could be subsidizing the rest of the university. I imagine the university foundation's job is to do just that, not just to provide financial aid help, but to bring significant revenue back to the university. And we don't have any slides about either one, and it's a longer discussion, but I'm very interested in what the potential is of both parts of the university to help bring in cash to fund research and teaching, which I know public service is important, but I think the fundamental role of research and teaching. So at some point, I would like a much more thorough review of what the potential is, what they're doing, what they've done historically for university funds.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Fitzenreiter,
I believe you're going to give us. We'd be happy to come back and talk about it.
And we'll be having you back again, because there's another budget you want us to look at. Members, on Wednesday we're going to start with Minskew. I hope they're ready, fully loaded, prepared. I see heads nodding in the audience. So we will, any other questions today? Representative Gruenhagen.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just say your leadership has given me one of the most bipartisan feelings I've ever had since I've been here.
Representative Gruenhagen, I just purchased a classic Kenneth Smith golf club that has a chipper on both sides. It's a bipartisan chipping club. Come on in, I'll let you use it. Meeting adjourned.